from Hope and Freedom, Group of NA, in the ICANA.
Oh, what's this? Oh, you're recording me? Okay. I'm Tina, I'm an addict. Queen date is 2-2-23. I've never spoke at anything like this, so I'm a little nervous. So bear with me. So if I look at my phone, I'm just looking at the time. Don't think I'm like on my phone. It's cunning enemy of life. Like the reading said, addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we lost all power to do anything about it. The definition of cunning is the skill to achieve one's ends by deceit. So I'm going to tell you how addiction deceived me. So I was born in Pittsburgh. I'm second of five. And my father was a really bad, severe gambling addict. He was very abusive. My mom was an enabler. Only me and my younger brother ended up being addicts in my family. Everyone else turned out really good. So I guess right there, like, I don't know why it chose me, but it did. You know what I mean? I guess it doesn't just run in the family. So from a young age, I like started getting really depressed and wanting, because of the abuse probably. And I started cutting myself before I ever started using. It's like it released me from the feelings I was feeling inside. And it was like that until I found drugs and alcohol. And then they did the same thing for me. And I felt like it was more acceptable. That's how it deceived me. It told me, well, this is more acceptable. Nobody will call you crazy. Nobody will think you're, you know, whatever. Because I also started going into mental hospitals when I was 14 in high school. And everyone knew because I'd be gone for months at a time and whatever. So people thought I was crazy. I didn't fit in from a young age. I thought that I was very, like, outside of the circle. But once, and I never could, like, be myself. I always wanted to be very outgoing and, you know, somebody that had all the friends and everything. I felt like I was that way, but I didn't know how to be that way. And once I put drugs and alcohol into my body, that was the answer. That was the solution to that problem. I used because it was the solution to my problems at the time. You know, that was before I knew that there was another solution. But suddenly I became the person that could talk to everyone, that could get up and dance and, you know, be the life of the party. I was so much happier. All of those things I wanted to be, that gave me that. So I started using heavy when I was 19. I met my first husband and he was 10 years older. His whole family lived with him and they were all like severe addicts. I think that it deceived me again right there. Like, I thought that the only way I could be around these people was if I used too. Not to say that I didn't already like using, I did. But I also felt like if I did the kind of drugs they were doing, I would fit in better. I ended up falling in love with those drugs. And I went on to be with him for 10 years. We got really bad off after a few years. We were homeless, sleeping on the streets. I started doing anything I could to get drugs. And I ended up getting pregnant for the first time when I was 20. And I was about 7.5 months pregnant and I had to have an emergency C-section. Now, I did go get on methadone. I'm not gonna like name every drug, but I just need to tell you how I got clean. While I was pregnant, I got as clean as you can be on methadone. And so I had the baby at 7.5 months. I had to have an emergency C-section and I had a son. He was very sick. He was in the hospital the whole time. Never came out of the hospital. In the end, he was suffering really bad from a heart and lung condition, and I never got to hold him. He was in a machine the whole time. I prayed by his side the whole time, crying every day, barely left that hospital except to go get my dose, and that was it. I like lived there. And by the end, they told me that he was suffering and he probably wouldn't last another 24 hours and that I should take him off life support. The hardest decision I ever made in my life, but the most unselfish decision I ever made in my life. I told them okay, because I didn't want to see him suffer just to have him around another 24 hours for my sake, because that's all it would have been. So I ended up taking him off, well, they took him off life support, and that was the first time I ever got to hold my son, was when he was taking his last breaths. Hardest thing I ever went through in my life. I don't remember being at the funeral. I don't remember anything after that. I was in like a daze. And once again, the addiction deceived me and said, you need to use. You can't get through this kind of pain without using. So I went right back to using. Also, my husband at home was still using this whole time. So I go back to a place where someone's using, you know, so anyone would know you're going to end up using. But I just tried to stay as high as I could for as long as I could after that, just to deal with my feelings. Then I got pregnant again about 6 months later. And this time I thought there was no way I could get clean and go through the same thing again. I thought that the same thing was just going to happen to me again if I did all of that stuff to get clean. So I was going to get an abortion. I got the money three different times. We got the money. We spent it all three times because I'm using every day. And that's how deceiving it was. It didn't even care, addiction, that I'm pregnant and I'm using while I'm pregnant. Well, 6 months comes along and it's too late to get an abortion, and I still had been using every day. So I'm like, now what do I do? Keep on using. You know, that was always the answer, keep on using. And I ended up losing that baby like 3 weeks after 6 months. I held on to that for most of my life, that I like had killed my child. Even though I was gonna get an abortion, I used the whole time instead. And like, I felt like that, I just felt like that. I felt like that I had killed my child. And it was very hard for me to deal with like the rest of my life. My husband ended up dying of an overdose. So I went on back to my neighborhood where I grew up, and I was with somebody else that I had grew up with who ended up being severely abusive, but we were using together, of course. I was using then, and we ended up on the street. We ended up really bad off. Those were some dark days. Addiction told me the only way I could deal with that abuse was to use. And it also told me that I was so low of a piece, you know, of a person because of the situation I was in, that the only answer was to keep on using. I didn't know any other way of life. Then during that time, I did anything I could to get drugs. I was out there on the street doing whatever, trying to steal. I wasn't a really good thief. And I ended up trying to rob a house one time, well, an apartment. I climbed in the window and I got everything I could as fast as I could because I was so nervous about being in there. And I get to the bar to sell it to the crack dealer, and I had some CDs in a box that I thought was a PlayStation. And he's like, Tina, these CDs are in Mexican and this is a cable box. I'm like, so I never tried to rob a house again because I was not a good thief. But I started robbing men. That's what I did. Like, I got sick of selling myself, so I started finding ways to get their money. I was a very good manipulator to men. So I used that because that's what I needed to do. Once again, while I was doing all this, addiction told me I needed to use to be able to be around these men and to be able to deal with that problem. You know what I mean? And so that's what I did. I got high before and after every time I did anything like that. I got high anytime I could because that was my life right then. I did not have it easy. Drugs were not just given to me like some people, or I had a lot of money. I had to scrape for everything I had every day. So then I ended up getting pregnant three more times while I was with him. Lost all of them. I started losing babies faster and faster. And it was whether I went and got clean or not. I like to tell myself that with all these next ones, I went and got clean, at least like on methadone or something. But the more I got clean this time and really think about it, it's probably a lie that I've been telling myself, like, my whole life, you know, because I couldn't face the fact that I just kept on using all these times. I ended up losing 8 children altogether. The last one, all I did was vape. So, you know, later down the line when I dealt with this, I felt like God was trying to show me that I was going to lose these children no matter what, whether I was clean or not. You know, that's, for me, that was the only way to accept what had happened, because I got to the point where, like, I couldn't even hold a child, like a baby. It brought me to tears every time. I had nieces and nephews born, and I felt so terrible because I couldn't hold them, you know, without bursting into tears. And then I had to explain to my family, like, why I couldn't. And, you know, it just was very difficult. Until a few years ago, when I got involved with a church, and there they, like, asked people if they wanted to volunteer holding the babies in the nursery. And I'm like, no way could I do that. But I felt like God was nudging me to, like, do it. And he was telling me, this is going to heal you. It was very hard to do at first. But after time, it got easier and easier, and now, like, I'm able to be happy for someone having a child. I'm able to hold babies, and my family especially. I feel much better about it. So God did heal me with that whole situation. Another thing is, when I speak, I like to also talk about some hope, because there's hope in here, you know what I mean? Not everything is bad. And I didn't just get clean to not use drugs. I wanted to heal from all of these situations that had happened while I was out there using drugs. And we can, if we get in this program, work steps, work on ourselves, and change our perspective. I'm real big about changing my perspective on whatever I was telling myself back then. I need to change the perspective and tell myself something new, so I start believing it. So anyway, I met my next husband, and we used for like a year and a half. He did rob houses and all the time. And he ended up robbing a house and being in a police chase and everything. And he was on the news and all of this stuff. I started a cleaning business, and I'm cleaning at this lady's house. And she walks in the room and she's like, I think your boyfriend is on the news. And I'm like, what, on the news? And I go see, and he's in this police chase. And she could see it was for robbing a house, and she's trusting me in her home. You know, I'm like, this lady's gonna fire me right this second. But she didn't. I actually kept her for 12 years. She was very understanding no matter what happened after that. So what happened after that is I moved into a three-quarter house after he went to jail, because I couldn't take care of things on my own while I was using. So I tried to go get clean, like I did many other times. I was in so many detoxes and rehabs, never wanting to listen to what they were saying, never wanting to work steps and get a sponsor and get a home group and do some service work and all of that stuff. So anyway, I was in a three-quarter house. He's in jail. I got him a lawyer, tried to pay for whatever I could with my little job, and tried to help him. He ended up getting sentenced to 6 years in prison. And after he got sentenced, I decided it would be a good idea to marry him down the county jail. So I marry him, and he's in shackles and handcuffs. We're in front of a judge instead of a pastor. And needless to say, there was no wedding night. And I ended up leaving, and his mom was there, and my mom was there, and his daughter, and we all went out to lunch afterwards and left him there, obviously. So that was some wedding. I bought my dress from Goodwill. I bought both of our rings for $20 each. That was like the best I could do. And I thought this was the greatest idea in all time, you know, because I was so in love with him, you know. And anyway, I kept on using the whole time after that. And I would go visit him every Sunday in jail. And after like a year and a half, I told him, like, I just can't do this for 6 years, you know what I mean? And he told me he didn't expect me to wait for 6 years. So we mutually separated and divorced. Right then is when I met my last husband. I've been married three times. And when I met this last husband, he was the first person I was ever with that was clean, that didn't do drugs, that wasn't even an addict. And I once again, the drugs deceived me and told me, this is going to get you clean. The new relationship with the clean person. See, I was always trying to do that too. Move to a new place, get new friends, get a new boyfriend or husband that didn't use. I thought, especially being with somebody that didn't use, that was going to change everything for me. But it didn't. I kept on using. I kept on using for the whole first year and a half or something. And he put up with it. I don't know how he put up with it, but he did. And so during this time, he ended up talking me into getting on Suboxone. And I did. And so I was as clean as you can be on Suboxone for years, and I ended up being able to get my life as best I could together. I still wasn't in the program. I'm gonna jump back real quick. Right after I was with my second husband, I did go get clean. For 2 years, I went and got clean, and I worked all the steps, and I got a sponsor this time, and I did all the stuff you're supposed to do. In fact, I had my sponsor now as my sponsor then. And we're talking like 20 years ago. And I had 2 years clean, and at the end of 2 years, I was up a spiritual retreat, and I ended up I was assaulted in high school, and I had the person arrested, but nobody believed me, so I dropped the charges. The whole school found out, so I ended up leaving school and dropping out of school. Never got my GED, but anyway, so years later, and I'm clean, I'm up this spiritual retreat, and somebody walks up to me and says, I need to make amends to you. And I'm like, who's that? Like, I didn't even recognize him. And we had name tags like this, and I looked at his name tag, and I seen who he was, and I just started crying. I'm like, oh my God, you know, he hugged me. I couldn't believe that he put his hands on me even, you know. I think he was just, didn't know if he'd ever see me again, never thought he would see me even at that day, and just needed to get that off his chest. So I went home from that spiritual retreat. I started having nightmares and panic attacks and all of this stuff. And this depression was so bad. I was scared to stay at my house. I had an apartment by myself. I was scared to stay there by myself. I was scared everywhere I went. I started feeling hypervigilance, it was called, where I felt like somebody was ready to attack me all the time again. And it brought up, like, not just what he did to me, but what everyone had done to me. I never felt PTSD, but that's what I was experiencing. I went to a counseling place, and they told me that that's what was happening to me. But that didn't make it go away. I was also seeing doctors and psychiatrists. I was seeing everybody just like the readings talk about. I was trying everything I could to not use. But the obsession came on me. I wanted to die if I was going to have to feel this way forever. And once again, addiction deceived me and told me that going and using would be better than trying to kill myself. And you can't kill yourself anyway, it would say. You know what I mean? And I probably couldn't have, you know? So it came down to either I'm going to use or I'm going to try to kill myself. So I chose to use. And I went back out there for years after that. So anyway, while I was with my first husband, my last husband, and I got on Suboxone, things got better for a while. And we would go on vacations. We got a nice place and all of that stuff. We ended up moving to Colorado. And we're just boyfriend and girlfriend at this time. We hadn't got married yet. So we planned our wedding. We came back here to get married. And when we came back here, one day while I was here on that little bit trip, I ran into the dude that was beating on me in my parents' neighborhood. And he's using still. And of course, the addiction told me I was off the Suboxone by then. I got myself off for like a year. And addiction told me you could use just this one time with him. And I did, and I overdosed, which I had overdosed many times, but I overdosed that time. And I went home from there back to Colorado thinking that was gonna be the only time, but now the obsession's on me, you know, starting up again. I hadn't used in a long time, and all of a sudden, like, I get that taste again, and I wanna use. And so I went around the neighborhood we were living in looking for somebody that I might be able to get drugs from. Now, I don't know nobody in Colorado. I just look for whoever looked like that kind of person on the street. So I approached these two young dudes that would hang out in front of the grocery store every day bumming money, and they were the two that had the drugs, you know. So I started using with them, and I only used a handful of times, because in them handful of times I overdosed three times. So the last time I overdosed, I was at my house. My husband, we're married by now, my husband was sleeping, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I go out to the living room to get high so I could hide it because he's sleeping, and I end up overdosing. Something woke him up out of a dead sleep. He says to this day he doesn't know what woke him up, but something woke him up, and he came out to the living room and found me with a needle sticking out of my arm, and my eyes were rolled back. I had had a seizure also, because I'm somebody that has multiple seizures throughout my life. It's not from me having epilepsy. They tested me. It's all from drugs, they said. So anyway, that happens. He saves my life. He calls an ambulance. They save me. So after that, like, I felt so bad, so guilty after that, that because I knew what it was like to lose somebody to an overdose, my first husband. And I thought to myself, how could I do this to him? We just got married 2 weeks ago. He hasn't even got the wedding pictures back. And like, he has all my stuff he would have to get rid of. If I would have died, just imagine what that would have done to him, I kept thinking. So I ended up getting back on Suboxone, and I stayed on it for years. I never used dope again since that day, but I used again. We ended up getting a divorce. He cheated on me after 8 years, left me for a woman that was married to another woman. That came quite as a shock. And it was very hard on me. You know what I mean? I'd spent 8 years with him every day. I also was in a car accident. We moved back to Pittsburgh and I bought a house. Because I was only on Suboxone and I wasn't doing any other drugs, I was able to use my money for something like that. That's why I believe in getting some help, as long as you don't stay on it as long as I did. There's no reason to do that. But anyway, so I got a house and everything, and he ended up leaving me. I got to keep the house. And so I wanted to start dating. So I look on online dating, and I got into that. And everyone on there, they want to go have drinks with you. So I started drinking a lot, you know what I mean? Because it's the only way I felt like I could be with someone after being with the same person for all those years. I didn't have the confidence to be with somebody sober. So I started drinking a lot. And then the day came where I met the dude that smoked crack. And I hadn't done that in years. And so then I started doing that. And that only lasted 2 months. He ended up stealing my car and leaving with all my money and my phone and everything. So after that, I ended up finding a dealer and doing it by myself for the next few months. And this is where I get clean this time. At the end of that, like, I had done a hit and run, I had totaled another car, I ended up being in the ICU for congestive heart failure from using. They told me if I used again, I was gonna die, but you know, I went right home, and I said, they're not right. You know, addiction again deceived me and said, you can use again, and I did. And then when I didn't die, now I'm really thinking, see, they were wrong, you know? So I kept on using, but I knew there was a better way of life because I had been clean all those years before, so I started praying to God, because I didn't want to keep doing this. I started praying to God every day, please give me the willingness to go back to a meeting. Finally, the day came where it was New Year's Eve and I used for the last time. And then the next day I went to a New Year's Day, like party for NA or whatever, at meeting. And I ended up running into somebody that I knew from years before, and he welcomed me in, other people welcomed me in. I felt like such a relief and such a weight off my shoulders. And I jumped right in. I was on Suboxone at the time. I detoxed myself in the first 30 days. I didn't pick up clean time because I didn't think I should until I was off the Suboxone, because it made me high. I had to be honest with myself. I got a sponsor. I started working steps. I got involved. I started doing service work eventually. I had a position at my home group, but later down the line, probably after I was like a year clean, I ended up getting a service position at the mental hospital, which I still do to this day. I like it a lot because I've been in so many mental hospitals, I thought it was the perfect position for them to ask me to do, you know? I belong there, you know? And I can relate. I can relate to those people, and I can relate to how much you need to hear about the program when you're in those places. Some of them have never been to a meeting, you know what I mean? And as long as I touch one person while I bring speakers in. So as long as we touch one person when we go in there, and they were the one that needed to hear it, and it seems like that happens every single time. There's that one person that asks all these questions and is all, you know, interested, and they take the IPs that we put out and all that stuff. And it just really makes my day when I go to do that. I also was the greeter at the door for my home group. I would hug everyone as they came into the meeting, and it was a huge meeting with like 90 people. And I would always say, like, you could come to the meeting and not even feel like being there, but after you hug like 90 people and welcome them in, you change your whole aura, changes completely. So anyway, I went through a few surgeries since I've been clean, 4 surgeries in the last year. And that's another way that addiction tried to deceive me. It tried to tell me that, you know, they gave me something each time in the hospital. I didn't go home with anything. But every time that obsession started up again, and it would say, you know, you could go use, you could go have one more. But I didn't, because this time I knew what to do. I had learned what to do from other people who had been through surgeries too. Every time I got to go through something, I go find other people who have been through it too, and I do what they did to stay clean. So I did all of those things that they taught me to stay clean through those surgeries. And then I had a relationship for a year and a half. This is where I'm going to end. I had a relationship for a year and a half, and he ended up leaving me recently. We were engaged. He lived with me for a year, and that was so difficult. Once again, I wanted to use. You know, they say relationships ending make you want to use. Well, it definitely did. You know, I thought that it was a pain, once again, that I couldn't bear, and that's always when I want to use. You know what I mean? Well, I want to use when things are good, too. But anyway, but I wanted to use, and I did the things that I was supposed to do. I'm on the phone with my sponsor every single day. We talk all the time, especially since that happened. And I also went through a deep depression for months right before he left me, because I deal with mental illness. And that's another way that addiction deceived me. It brought me to my knees, this depression, and I ended up having to put myself in the psych ward and to get my medications regulated. And I believe that mental health is really important in here, because it's another thing that makes you go back out. But today, like, I started feeling better. Now my medications are getting regulated and I'm starting to feel better. I'm starting to let go of him leaving me. I'm starting to move on. And I'm so thankful that you asked me to come here. This is probably something I really needed to do, even though I was nervous and everything. So I hope I help someone.
Holy shit, that was, what a great job, man. Very nice. You know, and I'm listening to that, I'm Del P, I'm an addict. And listening to that, you know, I'm thinking, fuck, I ain't even an addict, man. You know, cunning baffling, right? The cunning enemy of life, right? Like, you know, my disease wants to tell me I don't belong here. You know, I look around, you know, anybody new, welcome, man. You know, love you guys. You know, this place saves lives. You know, it's saving my life. You know, cunning enemy, you know, I also think of Insidious. You know, and this shit's insidious, you know. You know, I've been a little bit out of sorts. Today would be 21 years. Today my brother overdosed and died, so there's cunning enemy of life, you know. I'm feeling a little piece of that. You know, I'm not gonna tell you too much about me, you know, but about how I think. You know, I'm here because desperation, right? Through desperation, I came for help in Narcotics Anonymous. And it constantly tells me that I want to be somewhere else, that I don't belong here, that you know, I got such a fucked up disease that I'm not as bad as Yin's, so I don't belong. You're not as bad as me, so I don't belong. You know, I just don't belong, right? Like, that's what it tells me. You know, I like to try and I like to try to be a little bit funny, have a little bit of fun. I was on our way here today, yesterday, and the dollar store had all this cool stuff for sale, right? And I was like, dude, I'm gonna throw that on, because if I can't give you a message that can give you some hope, maybe I can give you a message that says that you can laugh at yourself once in a while, right? Like, don't take yourself so fucking serious, right? You know, like, and I say that as I've been sick in my head for 3 days about this day. You know what I mean? And why am I sick? Because there's nothing more I want to do than be able to help another addict come out of what I had to come out of. You know, the experience. I was fortunate. I ended up with 17 years clean once. And one day, in the pursuit of spiritual awakenings, on a lazy river, listening to the Allman Brothers play live, I thought, yeah, an LSD would be okay. Fucking 7 years later, this insidious motherfucker took me, man. And if I offend you for swearing, I do apologize, but I'm not capable of not being where I am, right? You know, like, because it didn't care, dude. After I ate that hit of acid, guilt and shame fucking hit me so fucking hard. And I told myself, I'm gonna give a little props to our sister thing. The AA one. I don't know how to call it. Our sister fellowship. I'm gonna give a little props there, right? That fucking guy Bill W ate acid for 5 fucking years. For a spiritual awakening. So I was like, Allman Brothers? Fucking my life was over again. You know, it did took me 7 years. I lost 13 rentals. I come in here, it's living on the river. 17 years of recovery. I went from not being able to graduate high school, captain's masses, you know, handcuffs, different things, to within a couple years, I lost 13 rentals, a 4-bedroom house in the thing that recovery gave me. So I tell you, anything's possible when you keep coming to meetings and you work steps in your life. You can take a guy who, when I originally came in, could not read. I listened to tapes and went to meetings with the books. And I heard it, and I heard it, and I put words together, and I started to be able to read better. And then all of a sudden, I could I heard things like, you know, like, and then this ain't the NA message, but I heard things, if I'm not the smartest guy in the room, pay the smartest guy in the room. Like I don't have to know everything. I did things like got an attorney, got an accountant, you know what I mean? So, but anyhow, all that being said, through Narcotics Anonymous, working steps, I became more than just an addict, right? So I became a father, I became an uncle, I became a business owner, I became many things. Then I forgot I was an addict. And wham! You know, it kicked my ass, right? I sit up here and I swear to you, I feel like what am I gonna say to some of these guys, with some of these women? What can I possibly say? The truth is, I can't say anything. If God don't say it through me, you know, because this isn't my message. This is the message of Narcotics Anonymous. This is the hope that a God I can let into my life will run my life, because it's not about me and it's none of my business. Only thing I get to do is I get up in the morning, I move my feet, and He blesses me coming and going. The truth is, I got a beautiful life today. I don't have 13 bed rentals anymore, whatever, but I sat, and I got to tell you, it took me 14 months. And I cried every day, and I go to meetings, and some of the guys showed up here, they see me crawl into a meeting, I didn't even own a pair of socks, and then I remember sharing that in a meeting in the middle of winter with no socks, living on a drug dealer's fucking couch, thinking, you know, and every day I cried, man, like, how did my life get here, man? I had it all, insidious, cunning enemy of life, stole it, you know? And I kept trying, though. Once I was able to, like, read again, I started trying to read. I started trying to work steps. And I would cry every day. But it took me 14 months, and I worked. I changed sponsors a couple times. And And I get through the first three steps, and I still just wanted to shoot myself. Like, I lost everything again, right? And then one day, and you know, you can listen to this, you can believe this, but you know, I think if you work steps, someday you'll agree with me. Something whispered in my ear. And I finally comprehended the third step, right? And it whispered in my ear, I didn't take nothing from you. I gave you something. What he gave me was this story to tell you. And today, that day, my perception changed. I now realized that I once again had purpose in life, and it didn't mean how much am I going to build up. You know, I dress like this because it's funny, because my friend says, take off your mask. Fuck, I put on mask every day, whatever, dude. You know, like, okay, I mean, I could, you know, I can put on a Superman cape, so, but you know, whatever. I can pretend to be anybody I want. As long as I don't get high, I am whatever I want to be in Narcotics Anonymous. And I can have fun with it. You know what I mean? I could pretend like I'm some smart businessman, or I ride Harley Davidsons, or like, I could do anything, right? Change my life because I am free from the obsession to use, man. And so, you know, getting back to the cunningness is like, it tells me don't tell you that. It tells you that I shouldn't have fun. It tells me, you know, cunning. I've also lost two brothers within a year of this disease. One just died May, 42 years in prison. You know, the truth is, I come from a long line of hideous shit, right? The good news is, because of you, Narcotics Anonymous, people working steps, in spite of the fact that I don't feel like I belong, I don't have to go down the road some of yins took, because you took it for me and you come and said, hey brother, I got you. You don't have to do that. So thank you. Thank you for showing up here. Thank you for sharing your story. You know, thank you for letting me know that I got fucking yets, you know? Cause I think about, you know, I think about shit like, I ain't been to jail. I can tell you that maybe I didn't get high enough, you know what I mean? But I can tell you 27 stories why I got away and they didn't catch me, you know what I mean? But that's the fucking cunningness, right? I'd never been to jail, maybe I'm not an addict, right? I got myself a little bit tied up. I started reminiscing about my brothers and stuff, and my mother passed this year, and you know, so all that stuff's just beating on me a little bit. But the cunning part of this in my life, you know, the insidiousness is when I walk out of sheets, I say, I didn't take that fucking fireball sitting on the counter. I got this shit beat. I'm bigger than fucking addiction. I can handle this shit. You see how I walked through there? Fuck, me and my sponsor was having dinner and my fucking plug stopped in and patted me on the shoulder, remember? Yeah. You know what I walked out of there thinking? See, I didn't even want to do any cocaine, right? You know what I mean? Motherfucking, that's cunning, right? Whole time I'm thinking, wonder if he's still there. you know, fucking. So, you know what I mean? The insidious, the cunning part is every day I beat fucking addiction, I think it's my fucking power, man. I ain't got an ounce of fucking power. If I don't have a God in my life fucking wheeling my feet, I'm a dead motherfucker. I ain't been to jail, but I'm on my way. I ain't dead. Fucking let me fuck up. Because the only reason I haven't done all that stuff is by the grace of God. He wanted me to tell you what a badass he is. That he's kept an addict like me from fucking death. You know, I come in here a dead man. Dead. My buddies, they would come get me. They'd pick me up. They'd take me to the bowling alley. They'd help me up. I'd throw a ball down, collapse back in the fucking seat. I did that for months, man. Help me. My buddy back there, he'd come. Hey, I'm going to a meeting. You coming? Hey, when I got here, I was still selling my shit, right? I had bottles of pills, man. I wasn't fucking giving them up. Of course, what? And then I say, here's the insidious. If I was really an addict, who would go to an NA meeting with bottles of fucking subs, right? fucking same bullshit that fucking took me out after 17 years clean. You know, fucking, the first one won't hurt. I can control this. Fucking, you know, what I remember, and if I could give something, because, man, I'm up here today because I want to give something, man. I have a debt to Narcotics Anonymous that I can't pay. But man, in the deepest part of my heart, the part that kept me afraid for a week is this, that I won't be open enough for God to come through me that I could help somebody. And that's what scares me, because that I will never repay what this has done for me. My brother, I rolled into my brother there, man. I passed out in somebody's hammock. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. He put a blanket on me, man. That was the first time somebody put a blanket on me when I was cold, right? Man, he said he loved me, and he's here to show up today. And I look, man, I got friends everywhere that love me, man, through Narcotics Anonymous, and I can't repay that. You know, so, but if I could repay it, I would say, fucking don't trust that Bill W., man. That motherfucker. So anyhow, you know, so this is a crazy disease. It affects us all in different ways, but it brought us all down the path, right? And if you're here and you feel alone, and you've got a couple days, and you don't know what's going on, I've been here for a few 24 hours and I'm confused and I don't know what the fuck's going on either. Come and say hi to me, man. Like, be my friend. You might save my life today, because I promise you I could leave this place right now, and it is so cunning. I can go get high, man. I'm gonna tell just a quick story. When I was brand new, I took this flight. The only thing I had was a hammock, and I was just, I don't know, 8 months clean, something, 6 months clean. And I took this flight, and I had a hammock, and somebody told me there was a convention down in Key West, and I said, I'm going. So I jumped on a plane. I had a thing. I seen a woman that had a fucking NA shirt on, so I accosted her. She's like 80 years old, and I'm like, lady, can I come with you? And she's scared to death, right? Anyway. You know, some of you see me, this is about as clean cut as I've been in a long time, man. I'm really trying to get cleaned up, man, right? Like, you know, my clean date, 12, I got the best clean date of all, I gotta tell you, is 12-3-21, 1-2-3-2-1. My friend Pete pointed that out to me. It took somebody else to tell me. But like everything, anything good in my life, somebody else told me, right? You know, I have never had an original thought myself. But man, so I get down there, right? There's nothing but old timers, okay? They're all living life, man. They got 20 years. The speakers are all like flown in and paid a million. I don't know what they do, man. I don't know how that shit works, but it's just beautiful stuff, right? I put my hammock up. I don't know what I'm doing. I hang my swim trunks on the trees, because, you know, that's how I come from, homeless and shit, right? Dude, my shit and underwear's all hanging up right in front of where the main speaker's at. Yeah, what a beautiful time. Cunning enemy. Cunning fucking enemy. I tell you, cunning fucking enemy. Fucking young person died that day in that fucking retreat with all them old timers. Fucking went in the bathroom and overdosed. And I am that capable. I know what it's like to fucking walk out of a meeting and get high. First time I come in here, I came for a way of a mental ward. They put me in a rehab. Fucking lightning bolt, once too many, thousands never enough. Fucking heard it, put 17 years together. Cunning enemy. You quit the very first time you tried. You can't possibly be an addict, right? There's that Bill W. come in my head, see? And it, listen, and if I quit the first time then, why can't I just quit if it's no good? Fucking 7 years of trying to quit. White key tag. Fucking, you know, and I really, I tried to hang on that AA thing, man, because I could still do cocaine and not drink. I could still fucking eat, you know, do pills and not drink. But man, even they wouldn't keep me, right? It was like, dude, you're really not supposed to be here. Yeah. some places you fit in and some places you don't. But what I want to share with you, whether you got a day or you got 20 years, grow where you're planted. Like, this is our spot, man. You're here. You need help. I need help. Fucking say, hey, I need help. Fucking somebody says, how are you doing? They're really saying, hug me, motherfucker. I need some of that NA love, man. You know, cunning enemy. Oh my God, cunning enemy. Fucking, I come in new. I'm like, oh God, somebody help me. Fuck. 2 years later, I got a job. Fuck, got me a place to live. What's up, dude? Fucking pat newcomers on their fucking shoulder because I'm too fucking, got too much time. Fuck. Hug somebody. Give them both of your arms. Show them that you fucking appreciate it. And I'm not saying what you should do. I'm reminding me. Because the cunning enemy says that I should be looking at what you're doing. I don't want to look at me. I did say though today, man, if I ever get a chance to look in my mirror and I see Eric B., I'll know I made it. Hey, I love you guys. Thanks.